Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at FanRag Sports and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at FanRag Sports and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts. You will find us. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. 331-979-1369 is the line to text and call. Interact with the show anywhere you're listening to the show, whenever you're listening to the show. 331-979-1369. You guys have been fantastic interacting with us leading up to draft time. So if you want to leave us a voicemail and hear it played right here on the show, as well as our responses to your question or your comment, leave it for us at 331-979-1369. So Matt Peck is out for today, and we have a great interview coming up with Josh Lloyd. He's the fantasy basketball expert, and he's also the host of the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast, but he does great work with the NBA draft and all things analytics, and he's got a lot of Bulls stuff for you guys today. So that is going to be a great conversation. But before we get to Josh Lloyd and the conversation I had with him, I wanted to update you guys on a few Bulls notes before we go into the weekend. So one, Lauri Markkanen is not going to play in Summer League. This is according to Cody Westerlund. It seems like he's too good to play in the Summer League for second-year players. More often than not, second-year players are usually at Summer League, and especially in Lauri Markkanen's case, I think what we saw from him in year one probably bodes well that he's not going to play in Summer League, and I don't know how much he would get out of playing against guys that are trying to make rosters or newly drafted players. So he's got some commitments to his Finland team, so he's going to go overseas and play there as opposed to playing in Summer League in July. So just wanted to update you guys on that. Antonio Blakeney might play for the Bulls in the Summer League. He's still recovering from a wrist fracture that left him out of the last handful of games for the Bulls in the regular season. So as he's making his way back and trying to recover from that wrist injury, he might play in the Summer League, and he might be a lot of fun to watch. Remember what he did in the G League. He set the all-time points per game average in the G League, set the record last year. So Antonio Blakeney, definitely somebody to watch. A couple other notes. So as you guys have heard, we've been talking about Chandler Hutchison, and I think a lot of other Bulls analysts out there, writers, bloggers, whatever you want to call them, has been talking about Chandler Hutchison and making the connection to the Bulls at number 22. He shut down his workouts at the NBA Combine early on, and there was a rumor out there that he had a commitment between number 17 and 23 in this draft, and a lot of people were pointing to the Bulls as being the one team that made that commitment. The Indiana Pacers also making that commitment too. There was a rumor about that. So a couple of those teams, but it made the most sense that Chandler Hutchison and the Bulls made sense at number 22. Well, there was another report coming out from Draft Express from ESPN in their latest insider that says that a lot of scouts and experts are actually pointing to the Brooklyn Nets at number 29 as the team to give Chandler Hutchison that commitment should he end up falling that far. Now, I don't expect him to fall that far, and it doesn't necessarily mean the Bulls aren't still the favorites to take him there. I think the connections are strong, and it would make sense if they went without taking Bridges. And even if they did took Mikal Bridges at number 7, I think it still makes sense for the Bulls to load up on forwards, especially 3 and D wing players. And look, outside of the connections too, I think Chandler Hutchinson makes a lot of sense for what the Bulls draft in the past, and he'd be a good guy to start off in that second unit and be a little bit more experienced and I think a little bit more ready to go than some of these other guys that they can take at number 22. Final note too, as we head into the interview, John Paxson said in an interview on McNeil and Parkins on 670 The Score today that there was no truth that the Bulls were unpleased with Chris Dunn this offseason. So he pretty much said that the report wasn't accurate, and he finished off the conversation about Chris Dunn by saying that they have high hopes for Chris Dunn this season and his future going forward with the Chicago Bulls. So I think we can put to rest for now at least their skepticism on whether or not they were unhappy with Chris Dunn. And I just told you guys, I don't think that follows the path of what Chris Dunn really is and everything leading up to him, especially when he played in college, how he got to that point and how he got to the point of being a top prospect in the draft when he went. So looking at that body of work and everything that's been said about Chris Dunn and what we know so far about him, that report doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. And look, there still could be some truth behind it. I think an important note was Will Perdue was on a show a couple days ago and talking about John Paxson as a teammate, and he made an interesting note that I don't think a lot of people think about, but this should be something that is definitely a flag in terms of whether or not they were unpleased with Chris Dunn. So we know a lot of guys in this age in basketball have trainers and they go work out in their hometowns or wherever they feel like across the country and are traveling a lot compared to maybe back in the 80s and the 90s where a lot of guys stayed in town and they were in the gym every day with their teammates, sort of building that bond. I think the important note for this is when Will Perdue was talking about John Paxson, he made a comment saying that when they were playing, especially when playing alongside Michael Jordan and some of these other guys that maybe got too full of themselves, he said, if you're out of sight, you're out of mind when you're inside a locker room or you're here in the off season. If you're not around the team every day and people aren't talking about you, well, then you start to question and people don't really know what you're doing. So I take that mindset and you think about how mad they got when Niko Mirotić went overseas to play in Europe and went overseas to play in the offseason rather than sticking around the Bulls camp and developing his game and his chemistry with Bulls teams. They didn't like that so much. And, you know, there was talk about him this offseason staying here in Chicago and working on that. I think that's something you can point to as well, is maybe Chris Dunn isn't here working out in Chicago and people are looking at that, or John Paxson in the front office is looking at that and kind of having some questions on whether or not Chris Dunn is working out in full and maximizing his full potential. So maybe that's why there was that report of maybe they didn't like the strategy that Chris Dunn was going for. But the reports also, and Casey Johnson said it too when he was talking with Matt last week, that every time he's been at the Advocate Center, that there's been a workout, Chris Dunn has been there. So that's just a couple things to throw out there and to keep that in mind. So I think it's interesting comments about Will Perdue when John Paxson was playing and how that's kind of carried over and his philosophy going for players in the offseason and the way he's kind of commanded that as vice president of basketball operations. All right, with that, let's get to our interview with Josh Lloyd. Remember, you can follow him on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball. He is the Locked On Podcast Network's fantasy basketball expert. He's got a lot of really interesting Bulls takes, and I think he knows this draft class probably one of the best out of the Locked On Podcast Network, out of any analyst that we have so far on this network. So really interesting conversation, not only about the draft, but free agency in general and where this rebuild is going to go from 2018, 2019 and beyond that, and so much more. So stick with us. Here's Josh Lloyd from the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast.
Follow Locked On Bulls on social media, on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. And on Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnChiBulls. Stay up to date with everything Chicago Bulls at LockedOnBulls.com. And subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts.
All right, we are pleased to welcome on Locked On Bulls for the first time one of our colleagues at Locked On Podcast Network. He's the lead fantasy basketball analyst at Bask Monster, and he also hosts the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast. It's Josh Lloyd. You can follow him at @RedRock_Bball on Twitter. Josh, how are you doing today?
Good, Jordan. It's good to be on.
So the first thing I want to get into, obviously the biggest hot topic here with the Bulls is the draft coming up. I find myself every single day convincing myself of a different prospect and how they might fit on this Bulls team. The one person I keep coming to sort of a stop or a hold is Trae Young. What are your feelings so far? Let's get right to it. What are your feelings about Trae Young and maybe how he would fit on this Bulls team and whether or not he's even actually going to be available at number 7?
To start off with, I don't think he's going to be available at that spot. It feels like he's going to go earlier. There's the talk of him going at 3 to Atlanta. I think that even if that doesn't eventuate, like 6 to Orlando is a significant chance for Young to go there. Obviously, yeah, what he did in college was really fantastic, and people look at him as this shooter who struggled with efficiency. But he was had to do so much for Oklahoma that I'm not all that worried about the drop-off in his efficiency numbers. The defense is a real concern, no doubt. The size, the wingspan, that's a real problem. But he was a guy that basically, when he was on the court, he either shot the ball for Oklahoma, he turned it over, or he created an assist on about 90% of their plays, which is an extraordinarily large load, and he won't have to carry that in the NBA. The shooting will be a weapon, but can you deal with a Trae Young, Zach LaVine backcourt? That could be a real issue, and the defense would struggle quite a bit.
Yeah, that's been my biggest question to Bulls fans who say they don't care. They want to take Trae Young at number 7 if he's available there and think he could be a potential superstar. My biggest question would be just that. Zach LaVine and Trae Young. I told Matt Peck, our co-host on here on Locked On Bulls, like the backcourts of NBA teams night in and night out are just going to have a field day with those two on the defensive side of the ball. So let's say for a sake that Trae Young is available at number 7, and that's one of the options that the Bulls can take there. Do you see any disconnect with the Bulls taking him there and anything with Chris Dunn and how that would sort of mesh with LaVine, Dunn, and Trae Young being a part of that backcourt and maybe what they would possibly do with Chris Dunn?
Well, I think I might be at a little bit of at odds with the way your listeners may think. I don't think that anyone should be looking at Chris Dunn or Zach LaVine as foundational pieces for a team where you base your whole off-season strategy around those guys being franchise players. Like, of course, they came across in the Jimmy Butler trade, but that doesn't mean that they're going to be superstars or anything along that line. Dunn still struggled a lot offensively. Like, the shooting was still poor. He did some good stuff defensively, but you got to be able to do things offensively. LaVine's defense was atrocious. He shot the ball poorly last season. So I don't think we should be banking on either of those two guys to be players that we build around. So if you get Trae Young and he comes in and he's better than those guys, great. Like, you can move them on. Do you want to be paying Zach LaVine a big contract this offseason? I don't really know about that. So they're not guys. Larry Markkanen might be that player. I'm not even convinced he's a guy that you build 100% everything around at this stage. But to me, LaVine and Dunn definitely aren't. And I wouldn't be sacrificing on a guy like Young to take an inferior player just because Zach and Chris are around.
So with that mindset, and I'm sure there's some Bulls fans out there that don't feel like Chris Dunn or Zach LaVine need to be your foundational core of this Bulls team going forward. You brought up Lauri Markkanen, and pretty much everybody else on this roster can be expendable at some point and are not a critical foundation piece. So that makes me believe that this draft is all that more important for the Chicago Bulls. What do you see, is the favorite pick here? And is there anything that you'd be disappointed in if they took at number 7 or if they did anything with that pick, whether that's trade down or trade up? Is there somebody that on your list that you're most excited to see if the Bulls take at number 7 and somebody you'd be most disappointed at number 7 should they take there?
Okay, there's a couple of things there. Like, if Jaren Jackson Jr. falls to pick 7, that would be the guy that they should be 100% locking in and sprinting to the podium to get, I believe. Now, I don't know whether he would go there. I would take Jackson. I would consider Jackson as high as pick number 2 in this draft. So if he fell to 7, and it's a realistic scenario, you could have Bagley, Porter, Young, Ayton, Doncic, Bamba all going ahead there, and Jackson could slide. So that's a real chance that happened. I think it's minimal, and if I was GMing any of those 6 teams ahead of the Bulls, I wouldn't let it happen. But that doesn't mean that won't be the case. So he'd be the guy that I'd really, really want there at pick 7. A guy that I don't want to take is Michael Porter Jr. Obviously the back injuries last season, he was highly regarded coming out of high school. We all know that. We all know what he did in high school. But the two last guys who were really highly regarded coming out of high school were Harry Giles and Skelda Bissier. And I wouldn't say that's worked out all that well for both of those guys. Yeah, having hip injuries and back injuries at this stage, plus the lack of defense support it provides. He's got tunnel vision, passing, some shot selection issues. There's just too many things there where I wouldn't be like, I guess, pinning my hopes to Porter. He could turn out to be a star, no doubt about that, but he's not a guy that I'm super enthused about.
You bring up an interesting case in Michael Porter Jr. and the back injury, and I tweeted out a couple things today, just going through other players and former athletes that have had microdiscectomies before in the past and how they've fared. And especially in the NBA case, you can look at Amari Stoudemire, you can look at other players in the league, such as even Mike Dunleavy when he was on the Bulls, and Dwight Howard. Dwight Howard came off the worst season he's ever had in his career after he had the microdiscectomy on his back. Mike Dunleavy played in less than 80 games before ending his career, given he's only 35 there. Talking about the back injury and whether or not you should be extremely concerned with it or not, is that one major reason why you would avoid Michael Porter Jr.? Or if all the medicals did check out, are you still a bit weary about his game overall?
Yeah, look, the injury is a major one, especially, look, now he cancelled this workout because he was having back spasms and couldn't get out of bed and had hip issues. Look, that's still a real worry, but it's not my only worry with him. There's all these whispers coming out, and who knows how much of it is misdirection about locker room chemistry issues and being a solid teammate, which is never something that you want. Again, some of the poor shot selection. He only played a few games for Missouri, but he had like something crazy, like a 48% usage or something. I don't have the number in front of me, but it was something ludicrous. Passing issues, defensive problems. If he's going to play, I don't know if he can play as a three. And then if he's going to play as a four, how does that go along with Markkanen? And can he defend other big men? There's just too many question marks. Now, if I was picking at pick 8 or 9, and he fell down there, I think you have to take that chance. But I reckon there might be someone else at 7 that I'd prefer over Porter.
So finally, I wanted just to wrap up Trae Young and Michael Porter Jr. because those seem like the high-risk, high-reward type of players. And I don't know if the Bulls, and especially with what history tells us, they're the type of team to take the risk on either of those players. But should both of those fall to number 7, which one do you think is the bigger risk? Or if the Bulls even decide to trade up and that's somebody that they're looking at, who's the bigger risk in this draft, especially for the Chicago Bulls team? Is it Trae Young or is it Michael Porter Jr.?
I think the Porter is the bigger risk. There are way more many risk factors there. Young's only, it's not really a risk. It's like, okay, we know he's got a deficiency defensively. We know that point guard defense is not as important as big man defense. He still can get roasted at times, but it's not necessarily a risk. We saw what he did offensively, historic offensive type production. He's not going to even be forced into that sort of a load at the NBA, so the percentages should rise. I don't think it's necessarily a risk. You're going in knowing this is what we have to plan against in terms of his defense, and maybe that can improve, but we know we've got the offense there. With Porter, there are just many different things that are a risk. We haven't seen high-level basketball from him for over 12 months now, and a lot changes in those developmental years in your late teens, early 20s, and whether that back is still a problem, it is a real worry. So I think the risk with Porter is significantly higher than Young.
All right, let's get to the other pick that the Chicago Bulls have this season and in this draft. That's at number 22. There's a lot of rumblings at the NBA Combine that a player at Boise State, Chandler Hutchison, had shut down his workouts because he got a commitment somewhere between 17 and 23. There was a new report as of recently, about 48 hours ago, that a lot of teams are saying and pointing to that commitment was actually from the Brooklyn Nets. So I guess my question for you is it going to be based more off of who they take at number 7 and more the position, or are they just going to go with the best player available at both picks? And who do you like at number 22? And if Chandler Hutchison is the guy and that connections are there and they were the team to give him a promise, what do you think about his game overall?
Yeah, Chandler Hutchison's an interesting one. Obviously, he's a bit of an older player as a rookie, but I really like what he can do. Played against, obviously, not elite competition with Boise State, but the scoring, it's really hard to ignore, but he does more than that. Like, his ability to create on the wing, I think, is really, really key. A guy who can distribute, can handle the ball, I think that would be perfect for pretty much any NBA team, but especially this Chicago team, who's been struggling with guys like Denzel Valentine and David Nwaba and Justin Holiday playing the three at times last season. A guy like Hutchison, not that he'd step in and be a day one starter, but having a player who can score in that sort of volume and create for others, even if he's in a secondary role, a sixth man. I think he'll be really, really strong option to look at there with our pick 22.
I'm glad you brought up sort of his ability to create off the ball. And I think watching his film, too, his fearlessness to drive to the basket and try to score underneath, I think, is another factor as well, especially his defensive rebounding. I think somebody that plays the wing position can defend and can also knock down the three at a pretty decent clip, but also will rebound for you, I think, is going to be key for this Bulls team going forward, especially when you don't, when you have a question mark at center, you don't know exactly what Lauri Markkanen is going to be as far as a rebounder goes. I think adding that to this mix is all the more benefit. And I know there's some Bulls fans out there probably rolling their eyes saying, even with the connections, like this is another classic pick because of business connections. But I think in Chandler Hutchison's case, if you take away any of the connections that the Bulls have, he still makes a lot of sense at number 22. Is there any other players at number 22 around the late teens, early 20s that you might look at should Chandler Hutchison be off the board before the Bulls pick at number 22?
I think you've got to be looking at a wing player around that area. So maybe a guy like Kevin Huerta, if he falls due to the wrist injury that was just reported a couple of days ago, I'd be all about getting him. Maybe you look at someone like Troy Brown from Oregon, a bigger guy who played some point guard in college, but can defend. The shooting is a concern with Brown. There are a couple of guys I'd be looking at that spot. Josh Okogie, as well as another one who might be around in that spot who I'd give a fair amount of consideration to. But that area of the draft has been stacked with guards and wings, and that's exactly who I think the Bulls should be going at, because you really can't have enough quality wing players and guards in the NBA. Sure, the Bulls' center position isn't great, but you can get one of those at another point. You can get someone in free agency. I wouldn't be too concerned about making sure I reach for a center. But if I was going to look for a center, someone like Mitchell Robinson is a player there, an athletic rim runner, rim protector with significant upside. We didn't see him play, obviously, last season. He'd be the guy as a big man that I'd be targeting in that spot.
All right, let's get to some other Bulls news here outside of the draft. One thing that I wanted to get your opinion on was the Bulls. It was noted a couple weeks ago that the Bulls were the only team not to go to the NBA Global Camp in Italy. There was a report that it was over this discrepancy in fee of $10,000 per team in order to send a scout there. The Bulls, out of 30 teams in the league, were the only team not to go. What did you make of this, even after the comments and retort from John Paxson and Gunnar Foreman saying that they had reasons why that they decided not to go? What do you make of this?
I tell you what I make of it. It's this, I don't know, I'm just, this front office management of this team is really frustrating. And they can have all the reasons they want in the world. They didn't want to, they've scouted their European prospects. They wanted their scouts at home for draft workouts. All the garbage that Paxson's been putting out, it's fine. That might be the reason. But it's a bad look. When you've already got a reputation through the league, through fans, of cheapening out on stuff and being a cheap franchise in terms of paying for these things, and then having the rumor come out that you're the only team not to go because of a $10,000 fee is a bad look. It's a bad look to the fans. It's a bad look to players, to free agents, to anything like that. Especially when we tie it in to what happened last season when the Bulls traded away or sold that second round pick because their draft board didn't extend out to 35 players. Look, surely you just want to be gathering as much information and putting that out there that you're doing your due diligence for your fans, for investors, for whoever it is. You've got to be able to put that out there, regardless of if you've scouted these players, being one out of 30, not doing it, and seemingly petty and coming across as cheap. It's just a horrible look, in my opinion.
Yeah, even though it seems like it wasn't well constructed, and all the reports coming out of there said even some teams were sending their lowest level scout or video coordinator to just go there. I think it's a bad look when you're the only team in the NBA who did not do it.
Yeah.
Should have there been three or four other teams that didn't go, I don't think it would have looked as bad. On the flip side, some people are asking themselves, well, is this a play by the Bulls to say, okay, well, maybe we have maybe the Bulls are doing something different that we're not doing in the rest of the league? Is I question that a ton too, and I just think it's overall bad look, especially after selling the second round pick last year for $3.5 million, and then not spending money in the past on free agents. I think you're right too, and I think a lot of our Bulls fans here just kind of roll their eyes at it and go, this is another case of the front office doing what they want rather than what's best for the franchise.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And again, if you can't extend your draft board out to 35 players, like, you've got to be doing everything you can and using that as a public excuse, which is as mind-blowing as anything I've ever heard. I reckon that stuff from the Bulls front office last season. Like, you've got to be trying to, like, change that narrative, but they don't care. They're so disconnected. Ownership and management are in each other's pockets. They don't care. As long as each other is doing what they want, they don't care how it appears. And it's a really, really horrible look for this franchise amongst the NBA wider community and the fans in general, who are obviously passionate about this team.
All right, let's get to some free agents here. Obviously, the Bulls have a lot of moves to make on their own roster. One of the most important moves being Zach LaVine this summer. What do you expect from Zach LaVine in free agency? Do you expect any other teams to be remotely interested in him? I know the Bulls have said in the past that they're going to let him go out there and pretty much decide his own market, and the Bulls would be more than advantageous to sign him or to match any offer that any other team gives him. What kind of money do you think the Bulls are going to invest in Zach LaVine? And overall, what have you seen so far from Zach LaVine that makes you think that he's going to get the type of money that you might think? $16 to $20 million is sort of the range I'm looking at. Do you see anything higher than that? Are you even thinking remotely that he might get a max contract? Because I don't buy that right now.
Well, my snarky answer would be, in terms of what the Bulls are going to pay him, my answer would be too much. He shouldn't get it. I won't say he's not going to get a max contract, because he could, but the market is so just no money around really for anybody. And Zach LaVine shouldn't be the top priority for any team in the NBA. I think $20 million might be a stretch. Maybe he gets a short-term contract. Maybe he gets 3 years, $55 million, something along those lines. I wouldn't want to be putting 4 years, $100 million, four years, $80 million into Zach LaVine at this point. I'm just not sure what he can do to be an overall positive player. He hasn't been a positive player at any point in his career. He's coming off an ACL injury, which his athleticism looked fine, but his defense was even worse than it was before. He couldn't hit really a single shot as a featured player for this Bulls. Extremely small sample size, clearly, but I don't view him as a guy who I want to be a starting guard for the next 7 to 8 years. And if you're trying to invest $20 million per season in the guy, that's, I guess, what you're thinking should be in that scenario. Now, in terms of other teams offering it, yeah, look, it could happen, but there's just really not that much cap space around the league for any other team to come in and do that. And the Bulls are a team that will often just give these contracts out to people without anyone else necessarily competing. Shout out to Cristiano Felicio.
I look at Zach LaVine and I look at the benchmark of $20 million or $21 million. And to me, I look at what Victor Oladipo extended his contract to when he was in Oklahoma City. And even before that, what people thought he was worth in Orlando, in Oklahoma City. Then he went to Indiana and really made a transformation over one offseason and was able to come out and become a superstar in Indiana. I'm not saying that Zach LaVine is going to get to the potential that Victor Oladipo showed this year. Obviously, coming out of college, Victor Oladipo was his strength. One of his biggest strengths was defense. And that's sort of what Zach LaVine is worst at as far as basketball skills go. But at the flip side, Victor Oladipo's offensive game wasn't as good as Zach LaVine's raw talent is and his athleticism is. So I guess if the benchmark is Victor Oladipo at $20 million per season, you think that's worth it in as far as if the Bulls were to be flexible here at 2 or 3 years and then see where they go from there?
Yeah, look, I suppose if you're minimizing the years, it makes it a bit more palatable. But I'd argue that Oladipo's first 3 seasons in the NBA were significantly superior to LaVine's. With his, what he was able to do. Look, he struggled at times in Oklahoma City, but he wasn't as bad as what I think people were necessarily making him out to be. I still think he was the superior player. He's clearly the superior player now. And maybe LaVine can take that step forward. But I just don't see it for so many different reasons with that. But again, if you can get 2 years, $45 million, I'd be way more happy with doing that rather than 4 years, $80 million.
I think so too, especially with coming off the ACL injury. You said the minimal sample size that we had in a Bulls uniform, and really the only game that I can point to that said Zach LaVine took over was the game against Minnesota at the United Center in February. So you look at that small sample size of 25 games, and granted he was on a minutes restriction and they shut him down towards the end of the season. I think this offseason for him is one of the biggest and is going to be the biggest in his career. I want to get to a couple other free agents real quick that the Bulls are going to have decisions to make on, Noah Vonleh being one of them and David Nwaba being in the other. Let's start with the latter first. David Nwaba, what do you think he's going to command in free agency, and you think the Bulls are going to bring him back next season?
I think the Bulls will bring him back. I don't have too much doubt in that. I don't think he's going to be getting, you know, big contracts. Maybe he gets 3 years, $10 million, 3 years, $12 million. I think that would be fair enough for the Bulls to bring him back on. You know, what he can provide in terms of wing defense is good, but obviously the offensive limitations are pretty significant with Nwaba, and he's never going to be a guy that you want to play 30 or 30-plus minutes per night. But, you know, as an eighth-man type of guy, well, I think that's fine to bring him back on one of those sort of cheapish type deals.
And now for the former in Noah Vonleh, I think this one's the more interesting one, because I think it's going to have a lot to do with the Bulls, what they do at number 7 and number 22 in this draft, and whether or not they get back in the draft or they trade. Depending on what they do on draft tonight, I think is going to be a representation of what they do with Noah Vonleh. He's got a qualifying offer for $4.7 million for next season. If the Bulls decide to go with two wings or a guard and a wing in this draft, you think it's more likely that Noah Vonleh comes back on a cheap deal, maybe for 1 or 2 years on a prove-it deal?
Yeah, look, I think they probably should extend that qualifying offer. He's still obviously really, really young. When he was drafted, he was one of the youngest players in his draft class. He's shown flashes. He can be a decent rebounder, but the shot really hasn't developed as a stretch big type of guy. He's probably better as a 5 than a 4, which, you know, that might actually work for the Bulls. But he's a little bit undersized to play there, yeah, full time. He's not a guy that I would have any issue with them bringing back. And just seeing what happens over the next 2 years, yeah, again, a guy who had limited time with this team this season. We saw some moments from him, but it's not like the team is stacked with massive amount of prospects in that front court that he's going to be taking much playing time away from. So I think that he's fine. I'd extend that qualifying offer. He won't really have much in terms of interest across the general market. But, I think you can get him at a pretty cheap rate.
All right, talking about the 2018-2019 season, if you talk about the Bulls core 3 or core 4, wherever you want to dispute it, Lauri Markkanen, Chris Dunn, Zach LaVine, and even Bobby Portis's name being thrown in there, which of those four players needs to have the most improvement in 2018-2019 in order for this thing to, you can say with confidence that the Bulls are on the right track and this thing is working, that the front office can pitch to the fan base that this thing is working? Is it Lauri Markkanen? Is it Zach Dunn? Wow, I just called him Zach Dunn again. Chris Dunn, Zach LaVine, or Bobby Portis?
Well, yeah, Zach Dunn is clearly on your mind, Jordan. And look, Zach Dunn could be a real superstar, but it could also be the worst player in the NBA if it took Chris Dunn's offense and Zach LaVine's defense.
Oh, together. That's so true.
That could be the worst player in the NBA. But it all could also be a star. But irrespective of that, I think it's a really good question. Hey, look, who needs to take the biggest step forward? You can make the argument for LaVine or Markkanen. I think I would probably go with Markkanen, because you need him to go from being a guy who had a really impressive rookie season, had those back issues at the end, obviously, but you need him to be able to take a step forward and go, yeah, this is the guy. You need him to assert himself and be this go-to scorer who can be a high-usage guy, who can bury teams on pick-and-pops, who can finish down low, who can do pick-and-rolls, who can start to get his passing out of the post and out of double teams and really setting up the whole offense. He needs to become that guy that becomes the star, or at least show signs of that. You know, show an improvement in his defense, improve some of his rim protection. He needs to take that step. Now, I don't think that LaVine can ever become a true number one star on a team. But Markkanen, you want him to at least show that step forward, so if he can take that big improvement, that's the real key to me, that he can establish himself as the guy to then build around.
What does it mean for the Bulls if they come into 2018-2019 and they find themselves back into the lottery and we're at the same time next year? talking pretty much in circles about these guys and saying that maybe they need more time to develop. Things don't go right. Lauri Markkanen stays about the same. Zach LaVine stays about the same too, and Chris Dunn as well. At that point, what are you looking at most, at the front office and blaming them for what they put together or for the lack of talent that's been developed on this team so far? Are you looking at the coaching staff? Are you looking at it all in general after next season if the Bulls are back in high lottery contention and none of these guys end up turning to make that next step? Where are you looking as far as this organization to put the blame on?
I think that, first of all, I think there's a legitimate chance that they will be decently high in the lottery next season. And I don't think that Bulls fans should be overly disappointed about that. Like, yeah, they've had one bad year, but things don't necessarily turn around after one bad year. And you don't necessarily want them to, be battling for that, Charlotte Hornets Memorial Ninth seed spot. Like, that doesn't get anyone any benefit, really. So I think if they ended up with the fifth or sixth pick again next season, I don't think that's a necessary a big loss for the team. But if it does happen and these guys, as you said, don't take requisite steps forward or in some cases go backwards, the majority of the blame goes to the front office to me, because they're the ones who brought in the coaching staff, who screwed around with the roster with Hoiberg initially and put all those limitations on him, and Fred was obviously better last season than he'd been previously. So there's some blame that does go to Hoiberg, but in the end, the front office chooses the players, they chose the coaching staff, and if they're not choosing those two things to mesh or not choosing the right options in either of those, they're the ones who should be shouldering the large chunk of the responsibility.
Last question before we get out of here. I want to get your take on Kawhi Leonard, the situation going on in San Antonio, because I think over the past year, I've made a lot of connections, and I think Bulls fans watching from close and from afar can make the connection between the discomfort between the relationship in San Antonio and Kawhi Leonard and the growing disconnect there and sort of what happened to Derrick Rose here in Chicago and sort of the way the fans sort of turned on him, and especially the coaching staff and maybe the front office pressuring him into playing when he wasn't ready, or vice versa, that maybe he was ready but scared to come back. What do you make of the situation in Kawhi Leonard's sense and how it maybe compares in similarity to Derrick Rose here in Chicago back in the early 2000s?
Yeah, look, I never really thought about it in the Derrick Rose sense, but I can see where you're coming from. It does make a bit of sense. There's something that's happening in the NBA over the past however many years it is, 5 to 6 years, and I'm totally 100% behind players having agency to choose where they go and all that sort of stuff, but there's an inordinate amount of power coming behind teams' camps and random family members dictating all this stuff, not necessarily coming from the player themselves. And that's where I guess the parallel is drawn here, from Kawhi's camp and Kawhi's uncle, as we compare that to Derrick Rose's brother and his agents and his friends and all those sort of stuff. There's just a lot more people putting different thoughts and different ideas, sometimes conflicting, into these players' minds. And it's a real weird situation, this one. With Kawhi, I don't know the whole story. Nobody does. We're a long way from knowing all of this situation, but he's clearly unhappy with things in the Spurs organization, or people around him are unhappy, or they're telling him that he should be unhappy. It is a real large parallel just based on that with the Rose situation. This feels like it could actually get worse. It could get more toxic than the Rose Chicago stuff. So it's going to be a wild next couple of weeks, I think.
Yeah, I think making the connection between Derrick Rose and Kawhi Leonard just being kind of soft-spoken guys, don't like to talk to the media all that much. Kawhi Leonard pretty much being silent this entire season. And just exactly what you had said, chirping in people's ears. You have family members or people around their circles telling them all different things. Kawhi getting a second opinion, maybe listening more so to the people in his inner circle rather than what San Antonio has told him. Kind of reminds me of the way Chicago cleared him to play medically, and still Derrick Rose decided not to play, didn't feel 100% when he came back. And that's sort of where the disdain came from with Bulls fans. And I can see that parallel in San Antonio as well, even with them trying to smooth over the relationship with the Spurs. I think you're right in the fact that the relationship wasn't as broken that with Derrick Rose and the Bulls, more so that I think it's more broken now internally and with the organization and him and himself than maybe with the fans in general. But with these Lakers rumors going around right now, that might change in the next couple of days.
Yeah, look, it's going to be wild, the stuff that's going to happen. I think Kawhi might even only be the tip of the iceberg with what's going to happen this offseason. There's a lot going to go down.
All right. Well, Josh, I want to thank you for your time. You can follow Josh at @RedRock_Bball on Twitter. He's the lead fantasy basketball analyst over at Basket Monster and the host of the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Josh, don't be a stranger. We'll have to talk to you when free agency arises and later this summer.
Absolutely, Jordan. Looking forward to it.
Once again, I want to thank Josh Lloyd for being on the show. You should definitely give him a follow on Twitter. He's got fantastic basketball knowledge, and if you like fantasy basketball, his podcast is one of the best out there, and he'll win you a lot of money, too. I'll be honest with you right there. It's one of my favorite fantasy basketball podcasts to listen to. Very insightful and has great tweets as well, so follow him over at @RedRock_Bball, or you can subscribe to his show at Locked On Fantasy Basketball. That's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, we're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time, 331-979-1369. If you want to react to anything that we talked about early on this week or in general leading up to the draft, next week is going to be a huge week for us Bulls fans. And we'll know finally the fate on Thursday night of who the Bulls will be taking at number 7 and at number 22. So hit us up at 331-979-1369. Wherever you're listening to the show, whenever you're listening to the show, make sure you're interacting with us. You can do so on social media too, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Melly, and at Bulls_Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. For Jordan Malley, for my guest Josh Lloyd, we are out, Bulls Nation. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll be back on Monday with a fresh episode. For Jordan Malley, we are out, Bulls Nation. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.